Welcome to Grow Your Influence, leadership conversations for business owners and managers. Whether you own a business and have a team, or leadership is part of your role, welcome, you're exactly where you need to be. Join co-hosts Juliette Robinson and Christy Lee Billett for their regular conversations on all things leadership. No corporate jargon, no textbook ideologies, just real life experience unpacked in a relaxed way to help you be your best boss and lead your team with confidence, clarity, and control. This is Grow Your Influence. Let's dive in. Hi there, and welcome to this week's episode of the Grow Your Influence podcast. Today, we are tackling a tricky topic, which is when you are being undermined by the 2IC working with you, so the leader below you in an organization. And today, Juliette and I are going to chat about the signs when you may see this happening, some of the reasons that you might be experiencing this, and what you can do if you do find yourself in this situation. Juliette, hi, great to be with you.
Christy Lee, great to be back. I think this is an excellent topic. I've been talking with a few managers lately where this has come up as a real issue for them, and they're really struggling to know how to deal with it. One of the teams I'm working with, the manager has inherited the team, including the 2IC, and really feels that they can't do much to manage this situation. But they feel like every time they go to do something, their assistant manager is there saying, I'll do it, you know, and I'll take that on, and don't you worry about it. So it appears helpful, but it feels like their whole job is sort of being taken away at the same time. Have you seen this?
It's interesting. I feel like I've seen similar things around this, but this is a really interesting dynamic that you're seeing people find themselves in. And I have seen it in some organizations that I've worked with some years ago that were a little larger. And I think this particularly can happen when, as you've explained, we're dealing with structures that maybe we as the leader or the manager don't actually have a lot of control over, like we've inherited the team or we don't have the hiring decisions or are influenced by others in the hiring decisions. Because when we're hiring ourselves and we're making all those decisions, we would create a dynamic that was very different to this. But when we step into a role of an existing team, or we just don't have the choice in the team that we're working with, then we don't get that say, and that dynamic isn't established ahead of time. So it can become inherent when we walk into that role, can't it?
I think so. And certainly in the situations I've seen lately, the assistant manager or the 2IC wanted the manager role, but wasn't seen as having the skills or the experience or whatever was required to take on that role. But in their own minds, they presumably should be the manager. And I think that that's really difficult, because if you're taking that on, as you say, you haven't had a chance to establish that sort of psychological contract with these people. And in their minds, they are good enough to be doing the role that you're in.
Yeah. So, and I think a lot of the time it's very much their lack of self-awareness that has caused this, because if they were capable, they would be in this position. There's no doubt that an internal applicant would never be looked over for a role if they were even 80% of the way there, I think, in my experience, because organisations find it really challenging to say no to an internal applicant. And there are lots of reasons that it's often better to promote internally. So to say no to an internal applicant, to me, really indicates the internal applicant isn't the right person for the role, for whatever reason that might be. So it's their lack of self-awareness. And I think that lack of self-awareness I have certainly seen. I'm just thinking of a recent situation where a little bit similar, they didn't get the role, yet then became hell-bent on trying to control the workplace in a way to exert their authority that they didn't actually have. And the more they did that, actually, the more it proved to the organisation why this person didn't get the role to begin with. So I think a lot of that comes back to a lack of self-awareness and a protection of our ego, because when we don't get a job we've applied for internally, you know, it does hurt our confidence and our ego. And so there's a bit of self-protection that might be going on there too.
Well, particularly when we think we're entitled to it.
Sure.
I've certainly seen where external managers have been brought in to manage that person who thinks they should be the manager, to actually have the hard conversations with them, because the people higher up don't want to have those conversations. And clearly the manager who was there hasn't done that in their time there. So I think it's a really difficult position to put people in.
And I think there are lots of different signs that this is actually happening. Like the experience that you've seen, where this person is seemingly trying to be helpful and saying taking on those roles is one example. And then you see other ends of the spectrum where they are really deliberately undermining the leader in the organization by either, publicly declaring they disagree with the decisions they are making, through to, more quietly behind the scenes, undermining them within the team. I think there can be a whole range of signs, can't there, that someone is undermining you.
And certainly with these managers I've been talking with recently, they've also had that experience. So whilst this person might be saying, "I'll do this for you and I'll take that on and don't you worry about it," at the same time they're coming out of meetings saying, "Well, it wasn't my choice." So they're not presenting a united front on decisions that have been made. And yeah, absolutely undermining the leader in front of the team, or even more importantly, in front of stakeholders more broadly. So it may be higher up managers or suppliers and things, which I think is so damaging,
So damaging.
particularly when we're new in a role and trying to establish, ourselves and find our way and work out how we connect and how we're influencing. And I think, in a way, those things, we can deal with them because they're a little bit more obvious and they're obviously not helpful. Whereas when people are saying, "Look, don't you worry about it, I'll take it on," it's ostensibly helpful. So it can be hard to say, "Look, that makes me feel disempowered when you do that," or "That's my role, I need to be doing it." I think it can be much easier when people are undermining you to suppliers to be able to say, "When you do this, this is the impact it has. So
I
I'm no
agree.
longer going to, give you that authority," or whatever it is.
I think when they're being overt about it and in a very sort of negative and direct way, it's far easier to just pull them up on it and say, that's not helpful and this is what we're going to do. It's much harder when they're sort of masquerading it as being helpful, or they're more silently behind your back undermining things in a much more subtle way. And it can often, I in my experience, leave leaders feeling a little bit like they're the ones that are in the wrong. Like it can be positioned in a way sometimes where you think, oh my God, I'm overreacting about this, or she's just trying to be helpful, or am I going crazy here? Which can be very, very challenging mentally, I think.
I think so. Well, there's an element of gaslighting to it, isn't there? But I'm just trying to be helpful. Why would you take that as a negative when I'm just saying I'll do all this work for you? I'm trying to make us look good, sort of thing.
Exactly. And even though that their end game is to say, see, I'm doing all this work anyway to the people above them, it is the way they're positioning it is hard. And I think depending on your leadership personality as well, it can be far harder to stand up against that, because if your natural instincts is to be a more nurturing leader, to be someone that wants to give everyone opportunity, it can be very difficult to draw a line and say, actually, that's not how this is going to work, and here's why. So sometimes it's natural styles of communication and work that can also influence how you're going to navigate this. But I agree that the direct, opposition to your leadership is far easier to confront than the indirect, subtle, masquerading approach.
I think so. So let's talk about how we can deal with these things. One of the things I've been talking with these particular managers about is having more team meetings. So making sure that discussions happen with the whole team, not just with this particular assistant manager, so that everybody's involved in decisions. So there's more conversation, really encouraging people to challenge ideas so that everybody's kind of tossing things around. But then you're getting to a decision point and making sure that everyone's clear that when we walk out of the room, this is what we're going to do.
And I think that part of involving the whole team is important in the team receiving the same communication as the 2IC. So if the 2IC then acts in contradiction to that, the team can then say, oh, hold on, is that what we agreed on? Or they can bring it to your attention and say, I'm just a bit confused, because you're going to find things out a lot more quickly when the, because otherwise the team are quite often unaware of any contradiction.
I think so, and I think also, particularly if the 2IC has been there a while and you're new, then they may have established relationships in the team which help them undermine you sort of further and sow these seeds of doubt within the team. Whereas if you're having these conversations with the whole team and you're saying to the whole team, we are delivering together, let's get this right together, it gives them an opportunity. If the 2IC then starts to undermine you as the manager, it gives the others in the team that chance to go, oh, this doesn't look right, it doesn't sound right. You know, this person doesn't seem to be acting honorably. And in a sense, forces them to choose where they want to put their loyalties, where they want to focus
Exactly.
their
And it gives them
attention.
information. And when they can get information, that might mean evidence of certain things over a period of time that will, lead them to a certain conclusion. But if they're not seeing it, it's really challenging. And I think on a similar vein, the other thing that I think can be really valuable when you are new to an existing team is making sure you're spending one-on-one time with every team member, not just the
Yes,
2IC. So you can
absolutely.
really not only be vulnerable and sort of get them getting to know you, but also so you can really understand the dynamics, the individuals, their priorities and their objections, and what's important to them. Because again, if the 2IC is undermining you, they're probably not giving you the transparent intel on the team as well.
Absolutely. Yes. I think that's so important. So I think talking with your team and connecting with your team members is fundamental to
Absolutely.
overcoming this sort of challenge. Now, as I said to them, I don't think there's any value in confronting this sort of behavior in front of anybody.
Absolutely
I
not,
think,
no. Yeah.
and it's a bit of a judgment call about whether there's value in confronting it directly, even with the individual. Because,
Yes. Yeah, it's challenging on that one, isn't it? Because you do want to pull
it
people up
is.
on certain behaviors, but sometimes there are better ways to get to that point
Yes.
rather than being confrontational at the outset.
Exactly. And I do think if you create a shared vision and you get that whole team on board with that, then you get to start having conversations about, you know, how does this work and how do we want to work with one another and what's okay and what's not. And that can help you really bring the team in behind you, even if this person is still hanging out there. I also think, though, engaging that person to understand, you know, to try and have a little bit of that assuming best intent enables you to talk with that person and understand what is going on for them. Because if they are deeply disappointed because they were on a promise of the role, then you need to deal with that.
That's true, because sometimes you come into a role, being told certain elements about what's transpired, and you may find out, like you've just explained, that this person had been promised this role, not simply that they applied, but maybe a previous manager had said, it's yours, it's in the bag, or given them some kind of promise that they've now felt is broken. Of course, all their trust in the organization is eroded, and it's kind of going to be your job to build that back up. And that information is so valuable in helping you lead that person, because you're coming at things from a far more informed perspective rather than the assumption of what you've been maybe told at interview.
Absolutely. And I think it gives you a chance to say to them, okay, so you didn't get the role. Let's work on the things that maybe you need to do so that next time you're an absolute shoo-in for it.
Exactly. And in fact, that's
And
what
I
one of
can
my
help you with
clients
that.
did recently. They had to decline an internal applicant, and she was absolutely not ready for the role by a long shot. But of course, she couldn't see that. And they've made a promise to her that they are going to train and develop her to so that in the future she will be ready for this role. And they're going to send her on some external courses and do some internal sort of,
Yeah,
coaching with
brilliant.
her, because she could see a lot of the operational aspects of where she was doing quite well, but there was a, just a lack of life skills experience and certainly leadership skills that need to be developed. And, to the credit of this client, they have said, we're going to work to develop that. She's probably 3 to 5 years off, but that's, we're going to work with her on that. And that's great, but a lot of businesses don't do that, unfortunately.
Totally. Yes. Yeah. But I think that's an excellent approach to it. And I think if you're in this situation and feeling like there is this person sort of snapping at your heels and behaving badly, getting to the root cause of what that's about is going to be important. Now, there is always a chance that they are, you know, what David Gillespie would call a psychopath.
Or just at least toxic at the very least.
Exactly. In which case, you're going to need a different management strategy, and you don't want them anywhere near leadership roles.
Correct. Yeah. And I think
And
that is every chance, but probably not the majority of chances. The likelihood is that there's more information for you to understand. And it's that whole seek first to understand from Stephen Covey that we think about here. Because once you understand the full picture, then you've got something to work with. But of course, yes, if they are completely toxic, even towards being a psychopath, you're a very different plan here than what we're suggesting. But for the most part, that
Absolutely.
won't be the case, I would hope.
I would agree. Yes. Yeah. I just like to keep that in your back, in the back of your mind, just in case. So,
We don't want to be working hard to keep the wrong person in the business. That wouldn't be ideal.
yes. Yeah. But I think if you feel like this is happening, I think it's really important not to get sort of bogged down with it, you know, not to sort of take it on personally as your fault, but as a leader, take it on as a yes, I do, it's something I do need to deal with. And have trying to have this multi-pronged approach that doesn't just look at this person and say, oh God, they're just awful, or they're undermining me, and that's the only issue. You know, try and understand what's behind it, try and connect with them and the rest of the team, and really build that team behind you, I think is going to be fundamental.
Yeah, I agree. Don't stick your head in the sand. Have the conversations and definitely have that multi-pronged approach that you've suggested there, Juliet. I think that is the only way to move forward. And you'll actually be surprised because very often you can turn these kinds of people into your biggest cheerleaders.
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah, I agree.
Well, I'm hoping that's helped some of our listeners who might be experiencing this because it is a super challenging thing to be dealing with. As always, if you're experiencing this or if you just want to share your experiences or ideas for topics about the podcast, please just join us on our socials. Head over to the Grow Your Influence podcast Facebook page and let us know what you're enjoying.
Absolutely. And if you are enjoying it, we'd love a rate or a review on wherever you listen to your podcast, because that obviously helps
Absolutely.
us get the message out to more people everywhere.
Fantastic. Great conversation. Thanks so much, Juliet.
Great to talk, Christy Lee. See you soon.
Thanks for joining us on this episode. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a rating, comment, and review wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to recommend us to a friend. We also love hearing suggestions for topics or guest speakers that you would love to hear from. The best way to reach us to give us those suggestions is over on our Facebook page. Simply head to Facebook and search Grow Your Influence. See you there.